support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Mike Rosenberg from Columbia Credit Union. Mike says they trust what they see and hear on OPB, and that aligns with Columbia Credit Union's brand.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, April 26th. When it comes to nepotism in Oregon, we're still a bit of the Wild West. State lawmakers often have their spouse working the front desk, and we're in the midst of a statewide conversation about what role Governor Tina Kotek's partner, Amy, should play in state government. But in one central Oregon town, they are trying to make it clear. They want power couples out of politics. We'll discuss, and we'll also dig into how one rural Oregon group is handling the addiction crisis. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB politics reporter Lauren Dake.
I'm OPB Central Oregon Bureau Chief Emily Curitan Cook.
I'm rural communities reporter Antonio Sierra.
Emily, let's start with you. It's election season, and in your neck of the woods, there's a ballot measure that would outlaw immediate families from serving at the same time. What specifically does this measure say?
Well, this measure is one of a trio of ballot measures that's going before Redmond voters, and it would prevent immediate family members from holding office on the council or as mayor at the same time. City officials told me the rule would apply to spouses, domestic partners, parents, and children, but not to siblings. So if you want to bring a sibling rivalry to the Redmond Council, that is not at issue here. Fundamentally, what this is about is it's about a small town that's been growing really fast and people questioning who can hold the most power in local government. You got to keep in mind, Redmond's population has doubled since the year 2000. And in this primary election, these ballot measures would change the city's charter to rework city governance. The other two changes on the ballot would introduce term limits for local positions. So that means city councilors and the mayor would have to tap out after two consecutive terms. But it's not a lifetime limit. They could run again after 2 years.
These type of policies generally don't arrive on a city council agenda or a ballot without some sort of backstory. So what's the backstory here?
Oh, yes, indeedy. There is a backstory. So this question, all these questions go to voters just a year after the retirement of former longtime Mayor George Endicott. Endicott led the city for 14 years. He's part of a long line of very long-serving mayors of Redmond. And for part of the time of Endicott's tenure, his wife, Chrisanna Clark Endicott, was also elected to the Redmond City Council. And during this couple's overlapping leadership, they frequently butted heads with then-councillor Ed Fitch. And now Ed Fitch is the mayor. So he's championing this changing of the city's charter. And Fitch told me he felt like entrenched power and favoritism were definitely issues when this one family had so much influence in the city.
But I think it's more importantly, it's just a feeling that you don't have seven independent voices if someone in the immediate family is serving at the same time.
But I also talked to Endicott, the former mayor, and he's pushing back on this. He is publicly opposing all these charter changes, and he didn't see his family dynamics as a problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course it's personal. On multiple occasions, we voted on opposite sides of the issue. Yeah, in particular, she and I have a totally different, well, not totally, but we do have a different opinion of homelessness and how to handle it. And she was much more strict.
So he's talking, of course, about his wife and former co-leader of the city, Chrisanna Clark Endicott there. And the former mayor, George Endicott, told me he felt like these ballot measures are a personal jab against them, especially because they're coming so soon after he retired, after his wife stepped down, and after another longtime counselor they often aligned with retired after 23 years in office.
What are you hearing from the public about this proposal?
Well, I did a survey of the city councilors in this case because they unanimously approved sending this idea to the ballot. But among the individual members I spoke to, opinions were really mixed on how they're actually going to vote when they get their ballots. Here's Redmond City Councilor John Nielsen.
Personally, I'm going to be voting against it. I understand what the original intent of it was, but to me, it doesn't do what it's intending to do. And if we were going to be serious about it, we'd have gone further with it.
So he's talking specifically about the family member ban there. He says business partners could be a bigger risk for power grabs than married people. He supports the term limits, though, and he's undecided about changes to the mayor's office, such as making that term 4 years instead of two. Another leader on the city council who's relatively new to leading the city is Kat Zwicker. And she told me she's also on the fence about one of the measures, but she's on the fence about the anti-nepotism measure.
I am torn on that. I would have to say right now, I haven't even made a decision where I stand, but we have had enough comment from enough people that I feel putting the vote to the people makes the most sense.
I did ask the Oregon League of Cities about this kind of charter change, the family member ban, because it's analyzed all 242 city charters in the state through a database. And a spokesperson at that organization told me they aren't aware of any other family member bans like this in Oregon.
This is such a timely discussion because, as I mentioned earlier, the governor is making a push to have her spouse play a more active role in state government. It's different in that she's not elected like the Redmond councilors, but it does just bring up this larger debate over members of the same family serving in one government body. I'm wondering how much of the debate in Redmond has been very specific to this one family, or how much of it has centered on this broader question of whether this type of thing should be allowed at all?
I mean, for the counselor we just heard from, Kat Zwicker, she says this is definitely a broad-based question. She does not, you know, want it to go to the ballot as a personal jab to the former mayor who actually appointed her. And she says she likes him and would welcome, you know, him running again if he chose to. So, you know, in that element, there are folks in Redmond who say, you know, this is a broad question about fairness. And there are, you know, Zwicker told me there's anti-nepotism laws across different professions and in state government. The former mayor of Redmond, Endicott, argued to me, though, that, you know, his wife came into the city council with her own credentials. Chrisanna Clark Endicott was the mayor of Sherwood. The two actually got married at a conference for mayors. So their relationships was in many ways founded on this mutual interest in public service. And I think that kind of thing is more likely to happen in a small community. And Endicott says he feels like Redmond actually owes its success to people like him and his wife and other counselors who have stayed in office for many, many years. So, you know, around the time of his retirement, though, things did change. The Redmond City Council has gotten a big makeover. It's no longer the small town it once was in a lot of ways. And now it has a lot of new members leading the city who haven't been there before. And the people supporting these charter changes hope that they're a way to kind of keep that fresh energy flowing and encourage more people to keep coming to the table and bring fresh ideas.
Thank you, Emily. Let's pivot here for a moment and turn to Antonio. Antonio, you saw Governor Kotek earlier this week. Was her spouse there?
I did not see the First Lady during my time in Boardman. Kotek traveled with a pretty small entourage when she came to Eastern Oregon. Just a small handful of staff members were there with her. However, she did have some other powerful guests with her. There was Casey Sixkiller, who is the regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency covering the Northwest. And there was also Jeff Merkley, who joined virtually over Zoom. So it was a pretty big event.
Okay, so why was Governor Kotek there? And remind us the politics involving nitrates.
So nitrates have been a known problem in the lower Umatilla Basin region of Eastern Oregon for more than 30 years. These are chemicals that are often found in fertilizer and agricultural waste, and they can cause really serious health problems if consumed in high amounts. Over time, these nitrates seeped from the surface into the groundwater and contaminated it, which spells some pretty big trouble for the people who draw their water from domestic wells. Even though this has been around for a long time, statewide leaders didn't really start paying attention to it until a couple of years ago. Kotek visited Boardman to talk about nitrate pollution around this time last year. This was a milestone because I can't recall a time a governor ever came to Eastern Oregon and talked about this issue specifically. She promised a new day for the administration when she came a year ago, And she said that the state would reach out to every well owner and offer some form of testing or access to clean water. This trip that she came on yesterday was kind of a return trip in order to get progress on how things are going.
Like you mentioned, this has been such a long-standing issue that has gone unaddressed. Are locals feeling any more optimistic now that there are politicians seemingly paying attention to it now?
Yeah, I think there's a mixture of confusion and frustration. So even though this problem has been around for a really long time, we're still hearing that there are a lot of people who are just finding out that their water is unsafe to drink. And the testing rollout hasn't gone perfectly either. There are about 4,500 wells in the basin, and the state has only tested less than half of them. And there's also another big unanswered question, and that's, what is the state going to do to prevent further nitrate pollution? Irrigated agriculture is the biggest contributor to nitrates in the region, according to several different studies. But Kotek told me that she thinks it's premature to introduce any new regulations. So I think for the folks that are living on the ground, they're waiting to see if more is going to be done, and they're urging the state to do more. And that's if they're paying attention at all.
Well, we will talk about that again for sure. But let's talk about another story this week that is a massive one all across Oregon, fentanyl. You recently focused on the Eastern Oregon Center for Independent Living in a story that you wrote about. Why did you think that story was worth telling?
Yeah, I became interested in it after Measure 110 passed, and once it started gaining traction to be changed significantly. So to backtrack a little bit, Measure 110 and drug decriminalization has never been popular in Eastern Oregon. Even as it was passing statewide, all of the counties in Eastern Oregon voted against it. And when public sentiment across the state started to turn against drug decriminalization, the elected officials in Eastern Oregon worked to help change the law significantly and recriminalize drugs. So I found it really interesting that there was this organization that not only believed in Measure 110, but was still trying to carry out the spirit of the law, even as the state was moving to make it harder for folks who possess drugs. They focus on a practice called harm reduction, where they provide people with needles and overdose reversing medication and other supplies, even if they're still using drugs. Their hope is that this keeps drug users alive and creates a relationship that will help them when they're ready to seek recovery.
Oregon has struggled so much with the social safety net, something that both Republicans and Democrats have acknowledged. How are you seeing this play out in a broader sense in Eastern Oregon?
Yeah, the safety net is thin everywhere in the state, and there are places in Eastern Oregon where it's practically non-existent. For instance, if someone wants to seek services at a drug detox center, there is a facility in Pendleton. But Eastern Oregon is a massive geographic region, meaning people might have to drive dozens and dozens of miles to get that service. I talked with a person who traveled more than 150 miles to get to a detox facility in Pendleton from his home in Ontario. It's not just drug detox facilities. There's also a shortage of other rehabilitation facilities and drug counseling as well.
What else do you think you'll be looking out for when drug possession becomes punishable again in just a few months' time?
I think something everyone agrees on, whether you work in harm reduction or you're a tough on crime prosecutor, is that there are not enough treatment options in Eastern Oregon. When jails and prisons start to fill up again with people arrested for drug crimes, will people feel safer? I'm kind of interested to see what public sentiment will be like. And then there's also a concern about whether there will still be momentum to increase the amount of infrastructure needed to support treatment services. I'm looking to see if that will still be a component. But most importantly, I'm looking at, will this help people who are suffering from fentanyl addiction? Because prior to Measure 110, there were still people really struggling who were in and out of jail and didn't have a lot of treatment options. And so I think regardless of what happens, I expect this to be an ongoing issue that a lot of people are going to be keeping track of.
Certainly. Well, let's leave it there for today. Emily and Antonio, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Lauren.
This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien. Our audio engineer is Nalene Silva. Our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
Politics Now and OPB's critical reporting from across the Northwest happen only with the support of our members. Do your part now and join us as a sustainer at opb.org/pod.